I'd like to introduce and thank our host, Dr. Christian Hardegree.
Wow, there's some great energy in this room, right? Happy New Year, everybody. It's almost like the first day of school, right? I'm a longtime educator. There's a lot of energy. People sat in the back. There's spaces up front, just so you know. We are delighted to host Suncoast Tiger Bay State of the Bay Mayoral Forum, and I'm so excited to have our three mayors here today, Ken Welch, Jane Castor, and Frank Hibbard. You guys are amazing. You lead this bay in ways that are inspiring and make us excited about our future. And for that, and particularly as a new resident here, I'm so appreciative of your leadership. So, and I'm excited to hear more about what you have to say. I'm the new regional chancellor here at USF St. Pete, and I've only been here 6 months, which means I'm excited and engaged, and I know that there are so many things that I have to learn. Like the first one was, what exactly is Tiger Bay Club? Because I didn't know, and I thought it sounded like something that, you know, had some really cool marketing and maybe its own drink. I lived in Vegas for a while, so maybe I default there too often. When I heard about that it was a political forum, I got a little nervous. And I have to completely own, politics is a little bit of a tricky subject. And particularly something that I learned was a little tricky when I was young, because my dad, being a young man coming into my mother's family, decided he was going to show how much he knew about the world around him and discuss politics with my future grandparents. And it was about 20 years later before they would allow him to use their first names. I learned at a very early age that that you got to be careful sometimes what you say, and particularly to those future in-laws. Tiger Bay Club obviously is nonpartisan, and I think it's incredibly important that we not only model the behaviors that we seek in others, but that we have opportunities for conversations where we can engage in civil discourse, where we can have a difference of opinion in ways that help us move the conversation forward, that help us be more understanding of opposing views and what are the aspects of those. It's not a clear-cut world. It's not a black or white world, folks. It's a very muddled world. And when you pull one string on one issue, it may affect 27 different things. And I think it's really important that, and this is what I love about this organization, is we don't discount each other as human beings. Everybody has value. Everybody has opportunity. And so this is an opportunity for us to learn from each other. And to have this conversation. And whether we're talking about affordable housing, to caring for the homeless, what we do as a community, how do we elevate ourselves, how do we make sure that we're challenging each other in ways that brings us all together. And kind of going to that analogy for a bay, right? A rising tide lifts all boats. And that's what universities are about. That's why I'm excited about being at a university. Never in any other, I think, job or profession can you feel so young because of the ideas and excitement and energy that you're surrounded by, and so old at the same time. And so I'm excited to share this opportunity with you. This is my first one of attending these. I am hoping that USF St. Petersburg will be able to host more of these in the future. I'm so appreciative of our friends, our neighbors, our colleagues, and our leaders, and the work that you do to elevate the entire Bay region. So there's one other lesson that I learned from my dad, maybe he said this a lot when I was a teenager. I have two ears and one mouth, and I should be using those in that ratio. So at this moment, I'm going to sit down and put my ears to use. Nicole Carr is going to return here, our new president of the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club, and introduce our amazing speakers and our other delegates who are here today. So thank you so much for coming. I'm excited. Thank you.
Radio St. Pete is live at the USF Student Center on WMTBLP St. Petersburg.
It's a great honor to stand here today with so many folks in this audience. I see so many people who have been engaged in our community and been elected officials, formerly elected officials, leaders of philanthropic groups, professional organizations, who've really made huge contributions to this community as I just stand here and look around the room. So when folks ask, what is it that makes Tiger Bay great, I think if you just take a second to look at all the faces around this room, you can see why it's exciting to be a member of Tiger Bay. And I'm truly grateful for having had the opportunity to serve on the board the past several years and serve with the current board members. And I'd like to acknowledge our current board of directors, if they can take a stand and give us a wave and introduce themselves here. Amy. And do I see? And other Tiger Bay board members. I know Beatrice is here with us today, but she may be engaged and about in the club. And if our past presidents could please stand and be acknowledged, our past presidents of Tiger Bay. And then I'd also like our elected officials to introduce themselves. We're not going to pass you a mic. Maybe we can start here. I see our honorable here at this table, and we can move our way through the room.
Priest Edmond, Pinellas County School Board member.
I know we have others.
Laura Hine, Pinellas County School Board.
Michael Montgomery, City of Rockport, Councilman.
And as is a tradition at Tiger Bay, do we have any individuals who are seeking election at this time? Okay, we have a quiet time here right now, right? So I'd like also to introduce some of our special guests. We have Mr. Brian Butler of Tampa Bay Chamber of Commerce president. We have Chief Holloway here in the audience tonight. Today, we have Jennifer Webb from Live Tampa Bay Executive Director. Bridget Heller from the Shirley Puller Foundation. And I'd like to also thank some of those folks who have taken the chance to sponsor us and engage as sponsors. If you yourself are interested in participating or being a sponsor of one of our events, we'd like you to reach out to one of us as board members or also to our executive director, J.C. Pritchett, who's also here today. Over the past 3 years, we've seen some changes with Tiger Bay, and we've worked very hard to try and expand our reach and engage more individuals within Tiger Bay. You know, in the past, there was a central location that Tiger Bay typically met at the same time, each and every time. Well, we've made a change to that, where we are trying to hold our events in a variety of settings so that more folks can access these events. We have held events at the James Museum. We've held events at the History Museum. We've held events at the St. Pete Yacht Club, as well as here in the past. And we will continue to seek out other venues and different times. Something very exciting in the works that the board has met and worked on is that we are looking to move forward with some exciting events that will be putting out more information about Tiger Tales, where we have some opportunities where folks can meet and engage in sort of a more happy hour type environment in the evening and have conversations with folks on interesting and exciting topics around politics. So we appreciate your time today, and I would be remiss not to mention the Rays, who have stepped in to be part of our illustrious sponsorship of Tiger Bay, and our club, who also has worked very hard to be an ongoing and continuing sponsor of not only allowing us to have a board member who's from our club, but also sponsoring us. So thank you. And I think that we will go ahead and begin to introduce some of our amazing guests that we're all here to see. And that would be our mayor from Clearwater. If you could come on up here, Mayor Hibbard. Our mayor from Tampa, Mayor Castor. The chairs are up for grabs, so. And then.
I'm waiting to see how this
we'll get closer to the end.
And our home here from our hometown of St. Pete, Mayor Welch. And we have the honor of having our questions being delivered and our facilitator, if you can come on up, Joe Hamilton from St. Pete Catalyst. Thank you. You're already here.
I'm here.
And this is why Joe's doing the questioning and not me. So I'm moving us along, but thanks, Joe.
All right. Good afternoon, folks. Good afternoon, mayors. I want to reiterate one of the sentiments is that this is a wonderful tradition. It really shows Tiger Bay as a connective tissue that binds our community together, that every year all three mayors show up together and answer questions and speak together in a civil manner, and I think that's a great legacy that Tiger Bay has created. That being said, no easy questions here, so we're going to start off pretty heavy. This is all transparency. This is something that's affected me and my family, and so I'm going to bring it up first. It's one of the biggest issues in the area, something you haven't had to deal with in your careers. People are very passionate about it on both sides. It's going into our neighborhoods. It's infecting our parks, pitting neighbor against neighbor sometimes. And I want to know, in 2023, what resources are you prepared to commit to pickleball? Mayor Welch.
I'm leaving. Wow, so when you talk to mayors from around the country, this is a national phenomenon. Pickleball. They're devoted. They come to council meetings with orange shirts on. We are working on it. It is not necessarily a priority with everything else that we're dealing with, but pickleball is a real thing, and our leisure services administrator, Mike Jeffries, is on the job.
Okay. I heard not top priority, but okay, moving on.
We're trying to get ahead of that curve. No. As we redo parks, obviously, we are putting in new pickleball courts. It was a controversy in one of our parks that's getting redone right now. We were eliminating a tennis court, adding pickleball courts. Over time, all of the cities are going to get adequate supply, but it's going to take a little bit of time.
Wonderful.
Clearly, number one priority in the city of Tampa. Now, that's actually very interesting. We held a press conference to announce that we have added 49 pickleball courts throughout the city, which I thought would be quite the joyous occasion. But as the saying goes, no good deed will go unpunished. Every call that I got was, well, they're not in my neighborhood. When are they coming to my neighborhood? So I'm not sure I'm even going to try pickleball because clearly the addictive aspect of it is very high. So we're working on it. We are building them fast and furiously.
Wonderful. Thank you. Some individual questions. Mayor Hibbard, there's been changing of how things have been traditionally done. A lot of times when assets are moved back and forth and the city's involved, highest bidder is often with the expected winner, but you buck that trend considerably. There's a property that was sold from Clearwater Marine Aquarium, $4.25 million, when the Church of Scientology had offered $15 million. And obviously with the D'Annunzio Group winning the bid via referendum, is it fair to say now that there's a shift in energy that, in some context is that the church has bought up a lot of properties in and around downtown Clearwater, most of which sit vacant, which I'm assuming puts a damper on the vitality of the downtown area. So do you say now that it's clear that the folks in Clearwater want to not necessarily take the highest bidder, but the thing that brings the most life and action to Clearwater?
So we're talking about a referendum that we had this past November, and it was to take two properties, our old City Hall site and our Harborview site, which overlook Coachman Park, which currently is getting an $84 million facelift. It's going to be amazing. Be opening it in late June of this year. But we had to go to the citizens to sell the property, not to the highest bidder, but to a developer of our choosing that is going to be doing a $400 million project. We think it is a huge catalyst for downtown. It will include 600 rental units, high-end, a new 158-key boutique hotel, new restaurants, some convention space, and it's going to incorporate very nicely with Imagine Clearwater, which is what we call the park. I think we've got great positive momentum in downtown. One of the only good things that came out of COVID is we closed down two blocks of Cleveland Street, and it was amazing how it helped the businesses, and we're going to leave it closed. You're all invited. This late June, we're going to have dynamite concerts at the new 4,000-seat amphitheater on the bay that will hold 9,000 for concerts, incredible interactive fountains, park, playgrounds. It's going to be a dynamite space, very much like I think the Pier and Riverwalk over in Tampa are to Tampa and St. Pete.
Wonderful. Thank you. Mayor Welch, you are the first Black mayor in St. Petersburg, and you came in and made equity one of your top priorities, if not your top priority. And that included restarting the proposal for the historic gas plant district, which caused the choice of the previous administration to exit the process. As you've gone through this, you've obviously had many years on the commission, so a lot of experience in government, but specifically in the role of mayor, what have you learned in the last year about making equity happen in St. Pete?
Well, what I've learned is that some folks aren't used to a politician actually saying what they mean during the campaign. And so there was some surprise when we actually were intentional about equity. When we were campaigning, we talked about inclusive progress throughout the campaign, and every neighborhood and every debate we talked about the need for inclusive principal progress, and that intentional equity was a part of that. And so when we actually started acting based on that fundamental principle, and we looked at deals like the Municipal Services Center, which had escalated in value, it really was not a good deal for the city, and we said that did not meet our criteria for intentional equity. Same thing with the historic gas plant. And I'm really pleased at the four proposals that came back and acknowledged the community's priorities for housing and for tangible and sustainable ways to connect to the minority community that gave up so much 40 years ago. And so Mom always said, say what you mean, don't tell a lie so you don't have to remember who you told a lie to, always tell the truth. And that's exactly what we did. And we remain committed to intentional equity because that is truly the only way that this entire city moves forward. I believe the electorate believed that when they elected me to this office, and we're simply implementing exactly what we talked about during the campaign.
And so you said what you were going to do, and you did it. How has the process of doing it been? Has it been easier than you expected, harder? What's been different or unexpected in your role?
Well, I love being mayor. We were talking about being a strong mayor versus not being a strong mayor. And you still have to collaborate. You know, you still have to work with council, you still have to get buy-in. They control the budget, they control policy. But there are things you can do administratively as a strong mayor that really implement your principles. And that's what we've done. I'm really proud, one of the best accomplishments as I look back over the year, and this was really a great chance to be introspective and look back at the year, was a team we put together. And I've got several members of my team here today, really talented folks, tied into our governing principles of being in touch, inclusive, information-based, innovative, intentional about equity, and focused on impact. But they also know how to get those services on the ground in the community. And I think now we've got that foundation set with our team, with the infusion of those principles throughout our organization and through our budget process. And now we're at cruising altitude and going into this next year. And thanks to the folks who gave us another year through the referendum last November, we're really going to drive towards inclusive progress and making real impacts in the community.
And one last was, do you feel like because this was such a foundational change for St. Pete that it took a year to really adjust people's way of doing business or start to adjust it at least?
So I started the year, I was sworn in January 6th, mm-hmm. Okay, with COVID. Yep. So I was sworn in remotely. And so that kind of, you know, set the year that, you know, had to be flexible and adaptable. I'm not sure that I'm different from previous mayors, but I'm just direct about what we're going to do. And we're at such an inflection point in our city when folks from CEOs to college students talk to me about the criticality of housing and affordable housing, that they cannot afford to live in our city, then I don't think it's surprising when we make that a priority. And when we had the TPA Moffitt proposal before us that was city-owned land, and we were giving $19 million in value and not getting back enough affordable and workforce housing. Well, you have to live your priorities. You have to walk your priorities. And so I think that was certainly, I think, the first case where folks understood we meant what we said about intentional equity. It's not about a developer's priorities, it's about the community's priorities.
Thank you. And speaking of priorities, there's some representatives from our local baseball team in the room. Mayor Castro, what are your intentions for 2023 with the Rays?
That's why I separated them.
Well, our intentions are the same that they have always been. First and foremost, we want, and when I say we, I think the entire Tampa Bay community want the Rays to stay here and to make this their home. Now, between myself, Mayor Welsh wants them to have that location in St. Pete, and I clearly would rather have that location in Tampa. And so I think that Mayor Welsh is up to bat first with the offer that is on the table right now or out on the field. And then we're in the works with the Rays right now about potential location, third location in the city of Tampa. So I think it's a very exciting time. We are known nationally as Champa Bay, and we want the championship Rays to stay in the Tampa Bay area, and clearly they want to be here.
And any more specifics on location? And there's Daryl Shaw property in the works, or...
Well, it's not his property, that location where the ship repair right. in that particular location, which, again, would be an outstanding location geographically for the fans to come all the way from the Orlando area, from Pinellas County. You know, just a great location with the expressway there, with I-4 very close, and then having that urban core, the excitement of that urban core that most major league teams are looking for right now. We have that in our city. So we've got a lot to offer.
Wonderful. And as I get about halfway through the questions, I do want to remind you that you're going to have the opportunity to come ask questions. I believe we're doing microphones there. So I want to give you a question warning or so to come and line up to do that. So Mayor Hibbert, I want to talk about you going back to the clear mandate to do, we'll call it what's best for the city at large of Clearwater. You've announced that you're not going to run again next year. You're also, looks like, going to transition away from Mr. Jennings, the current city manager, into a new one. So looking ahead, you've got a lot of almost major, I see, legacy level projects in the works for St. Pete that you've brought forth and are shepherding. What are your concerns with regard to the work that you've done and coming into a situation in 2 years where you have two new folks swapping out whoever they may be or whatever their ability to continue your vision may be?
Well, I have announced that I'm not going to run. I have one more term. I've been in and out of office now for literally 20 years in the city of Clearwater. And I'm going to give a little more color to this comment. You know, the cups at our table say, come carve up a politician for lunch. And, we were talking about a little bit of partisanship by the chancellor. And one of the great things about city government is it's really not that partisan. Fixing streets, creating parks, having good police and fire coverage, those aren't Democrat or Republican issues. And that's one of the wonderful things. I think we do too much carving up in this country of each other, not just our politicians. So that's my editorial comment, as long as it's open mic night. It's one of the reasons I'm not going to run again. I'm not running for office, I'm running away. People have asked if I'm going to run for higher office, and I have no interest in that, because then it does get partisan. I think it's incredibly important to have continuity in your city. Mm-hmm. And we will be taking a vote on this Thursday to terminate our city manager who's been in the seat for 13 months. When you recognize the fact that you've made a mistake, I think you have to move forward and make a decision and right the ship. We do have a lot of positive momentum in the city right now. How that was created, I go back to Beach Walk in 2004 or 5, and it was leading with public infrastructure and creating fertile ground for the private sector to come in, which is what Mayor Welsh is doing in downtown here, and Mayor Castor does, and so have our predecessors. You know, we all build on each other and we hand off the baton. But we've had $2.6 billion in private investment on Clearwater Beach since we did Beach Walk. We are doing the park in downtown right now with a similar hope for our downtown to be revitalized. It's got great bones, but it needs a catalyst. I think that when I leave in 2014, and there'll actually be three seats up at that time, so you could have a sea change on the council. But the city is going to be in good shape, and I will hand the baton off to somebody else that the citizens choose to lead the city. But the foundation is there for continued progress. My greatest concern is just the near future. I think we've got some economic thunderclouds that we're looking at. We have to be cognizant of that and plan for it and have contingencies. That's what I do in my business, and that's what I think we ought to do as government leaders as well. Don't know if that answered your question.
I'll take it. Thank you.
Okay.
Mayor Welch, the municipal marina. Thoughts for 2023? What's the plan?
Well, we will move forward on that issue. I thought that the proposal that the Christman administration brought forward from a fiscal standpoint was clearly the path to take. It saved, at that point, we thought about $30 million in capital. We've tightened our analysis and the delta between that proposal and the city doing it internally is about $7 million, $20 million versus about $13 million. Still, that is substantial savings that could come to the city that we could invest elsewhere. That being said, City Council, because it's the marina and on the waterfront, requires six votes. And I don't believe those six votes are there. Our staff has talked to City Council, and I understand their perspective, why they disagree with it. But so we'll go out for an RFP. Again, part of the pattern on these deals that you saw is that they were unsolicited proposals, and it's someone else shaping your vision and your priorities for a parcel or a facility. We need to shape our own priorities. And Mr. Corbett's work, our administrator for city development, it seems like that's where the council is supportive in going back out for an RFP. So that'll be the direction I think we'll take.
So it sounds like we may end up at the same destination via a different road.
Clearly, I'm an accountant by trade right here at USF St. Pete. Bull 85, yep. Dr. Whitaker. The numbers to me were clear.
Yeah.
But some other issues came up regarding the style of this organization. Frankly, some misinformation. We were not losing control of the waterfront. Management contracts are not new. The pier was a management contract. But overall, having worked on county commission for a while, you got to count the votes. You got to understand where your council is. The council members that oppose this do so from a position of deep passion. And so we're not going to spend more time trying to go down that road. I think going out for a new RFP is the way to go.
Wonderful. If ever you need to correct misinformation, I know a good channel for you to do that at the Catalyst.
I'm sure you do.
So the next one's a little bit of a nuanced question. I'm going to use an incident in Mayor Castor's life, but then I'm going to ask you actually to answer last because it's more just the setup, to where I ultimately get in the question. So it's been in the news. Police Chief O'Connor was stopped on a golf cart, and she was a passenger, and I guess it didn't have a license plate, and they were just cruising around their neighborhood, and when she stopped, she mentioned that she was the chief of police and said, I'm hoping you'll let us move along. And the officer said, sure, and let him move along. And so put that sort of place mark in that. There's also been some back and forth at the Tampa City Council between you and Councilman Carlson, and now there's quite a big effort to actually change the charter of the city to take powers, move some of the powers away from the mayor back over to City Council. And, you know, in an ironic twist, one of the examples that they used originally was Chief O'Connor's appointment as an example of why this should happen. So ultimately, she says this thing that realistically 10 years ago would not have made a ripple in the universe. It just, you know, the life would have gone on. But in the world of social media that we live in now, she loses her job. The community loses who you thought was the highest and best person to do this. And now that's being used as even a deeper hammer to go after the charter amendment. So literally that one sentence, it's the whole butterfly, flaps its wings and causes a tsunami on the other side of the world. Is a risk that you live with on a daily basis. And so how much, as you live this, do you have to live defensively, and how much does it inhibit your ability to do your job? I'll start with you, Mayor Welch.
So the question was...
The question
how
was,
defensively do you have to live?
Well, it seems to be there's no such thing as a small crime now. Everything gets played to the extreme and has the most extreme consequences because it can verbally do that and builds energy.
So, what I tell young people at, Great American Teach-In or even my own daughters is, particularly with the advent of the internet and iPhones, which is, of course, the best phone. I had to get that in.
Partisanship, come on.
Was just pretend everything you put on a site is going straight to your grandmother or your mom. Just assume everything you do is up for scrutiny. Mm-hmm. Because everyone has a phone with a high-def camera on it and video. I mean, that's where we live, much less folks who put out misinformation. Mm-hmm. I'm really more concerned about the undermining of facts and truth than I am that kind of social media incident, because we are at a point where folks deny elections and the integrity of elections. And when you start losing that basic consensus, then we're really in trouble. We're sitting here at the epicenter of sea level rise in Florida. We need to look at the facts and understand what sea level rise means for St. Pete, Pinellas, Tampa Bay, and not get into these partisan echo chambers, much less misinformation about it, because lives are going to be at stake and they'll be our kids' lives. So that's really my concern.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Hibbard? I mean, this kind of gets to why you were getting out of politics to some extent.
Well, I mean, that's not the only reason I'm leaving office. But it's interesting, leaving office in 2012 and then coming back in 2020 and seeing the change in civility and being on this side of it. What I would tell you is, as citizens, voters, we ought to give our elected officials occasionally a little bit of grace. When you talk about any issue, people are the most difficult thing that anybody manages, right? If it weren't for people, it would really be easy. But we deal with people on a daily basis, and they have things going on in their life and everything else. And we live in a sunshine world. Now, they love being strong mayors. I'm a weak mayor. They don't have to deal with sunshine in the same way. I can't talk to my council members. Now, we're going through this process of terminating a city manager. People said, why did you do this so publicly? I could have had a V8. No, I could have gone to jail. The only way that we can do this is on the dais. For all of the world to see. You ask why government occasionally isn't as efficient. That's because we're doing everything on TV. So that's one of the things you sacrifice. I'm fine with that. But people ought to understand why the process is not always as smooth and pretty as everyone would like. But I would say that with your elected officials, they're people. They're going to make mistakes. We all do. Just happens that their mistakes happen to be on a stage that everybody gets to see. Ken's right. Act like you're with your mother or grandmother all the time. You're going to be in pretty good shape, especially mine. Sadly, they're both gone, but they're words are always in the back of my head.
Well, I believe that one of the benefits for me personally is having been a police officer for 31 years. No one dials 911 and says, I just wanted you to come over and see things are great at my house. So, you know, usually you are there in crisis mode and you're expected to make decisions based on the information, and you gather the as much information as you can, as many opinions, as many facts, and then you make the decision that's in the best interest of that issue or your community, whatever it is. And so in doing that, clearly, as a police officer, you irritate a lot of people, right? In making a decision that doesn't go their way in a lot of instances. So you develop that tough skin. And I don't pay a lot of attention, sorry, to all the cameras out there, to the social media or, you know, what's being said, the comments. I generally have an idea when I've made a decision that's not popular because of friends or family will text things like, oh, I don't think you're such a jerk after all. I'm like, thanks. But, you know, you just can't let those, you're never going to please everyone. So you have to make decisions that, again, are in the best interest of the issue or of the community. And I have always said that I simplify my life by doing the right thing for the right reason. And, you know, if you can sit back in a chair in Monday morning quarterback, the decisions that are made, which happens constantly on social media, you know, everybody's brilliant on that. But when you make those decisions in the best interest of the community, you just have to live with that. And they're not always going to be they're not going to turn out the way that you expected them to. But to both of the mayor's points, a lot of attention isn't paid to all of the positive things that are being done in the community because, you know, what is it? If it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more interesting. People are less apt to read an article that's very positive than something that is scandalous or dramatic. So, and as far as the chief is concerned, was by far the best choice for that position and had done an excellent job in reducing crime, getting that partnership with the community back to where it was in the past. And it's unfortunate. As far as our charter changes, our community has voted for the strong mayor form of government for close to 50 years now, and it's worked very well. And one of the responses that I would give in that decision making is that under our charter, the mayor runs the administration, therefore hires the team with the veto power of city council. They clearly have the ability to veto the choices, which is the beauty of that check and balance type of government. But if anybody on the administrative team fails at their job, no one runs to any of the members of council to complain. They come to the mayor because it was the mayor's decision. And so I stand by our charter form of government in the city of Tampa.
Thank you. So to push a little bit, just to, you know, to get into the point with Chief O'Connor, you know, bucking sentiment, making the decision, sentiment does play into the you know, their ability to do their job. You know, if you think that they're the best person, but the community is outraged constantly, it makes it almost untenable for them to do their job, and that may sway the balance of that decision. So to some extent, these extraneous circumstances. So, you know, does the same situation play out 20 years ago with no social media, or, you know?
Yes, I agree that we had a very open process for that. Did a national search, hired someone to come in. I mean, a lot of what was reported, it was an open search, and we did have community forum. Clearly, in the next choice of police chief, we will have more interaction along those levels. But even those individuals that in our community that were interested in another candidate for that position, my only request of anyone was to meet with Chief O'Connor just to meet with her and have a conversation. And I never received anything but positive feedback from those encounters and from the community as well. So I don't think that there was sentiment against that
decision. I meant her losing her job. What, you know, that's the sentiment.
Oh,
that,
losing her job.
Yeah.
That was a decision that, you know, you can hear both sides of that. Like, it was a simple traffic stop on a golf cart. How could someone lose their job in that position? Well, Chief of Police, that uniform represents the entire city of Tampa. And our law enforcement officers, all of our first responders, all of our city employees are held to the highest professional and ethical standards, specifically the leaders of those departments and those organizations. And so that was, once all of the facts came in, that was the choice that had to be made.
Thank you. All right, Harvey, if you want to get on deck, I got one more question. This is for, yeah, go ahead and just, I'm going to ask one more and then you'll jump in next. So affordable housing, big issue for everyone. What I'm hoping to do is clear up misinformation and to bring insight to the issue. I know that on the Catalyst, whenever we do a story about a new development, the comments fill up with, this is terrible for the working folks, even though it's a lot of times in areas that the working folks haven't historically lived. And then they blame it on the mayor. They say, why is the mayor letting these people in? Why is the mayor doing this to our city? So I'd just like to hear a few minutes on what you hope the public would understand about the process you have to go through to balance growth and attainable housing, and what strategies you're using, and maybe where you get a bum rap. We'll start with you, Mayor Hibbert, please.
Well, it continues to be one of the big challenges, obviously, in all of our communities and in the entire state of Florida. We have certain tools in our toolbox that we try to use. We still need cooperation with the county, and certainly at the state level. We also have pass-through from the federal government. The Sadowski Fund needs to be left intact and distributed out to cities. We also need to get over the D issue, which is density, and allow some additional density in certain areas so that we can give incentives to developers. That goes hand in hand with Blanton's and the audience from Forward Pinellas. We need to couple that with transportation, because one of the ways that we can make things more affordable is allowing people to get around our region, and they don't care where city and county boundaries are. They just want to get to work and get home and have a quality of life and affordability. So there's a lot of things that have to be unpacked to make things affordable. It's not just the housing check or the rent check. It's also our transportation and a lot of things that go with it that we need to continue to work on. We have two projects right now in the hopper. We had one fall through. We will continue to look for opportunities in the city, and we will slowly start to make some headway, but it continues and will continue to be a problem. We saw this back in 05, 06. Unfortunately, it got resolved through the Great Recession. We certainly don't want to see that kind of a resolution, and I don't think we will. But it is going to be a continuing challenge that we're going to have to work towards solutions.
Thank you.
Yes, without a doubt. The housing is a crisis throughout our nation, but specifically in the Tampa Bay region, one of the fastest, if not fastest growing in the nation. And it's something that we are all very, very keenly focused on. I made a promise to provide 10,000 affordable units by 2027. We are over 6,000 right now, and we are taking every possible avenue towards that, everything from tiny homes to multifamily complexes to single family homes, infill programs where we're providing city lots to developers to bring down that bottom line cost on those homes. Any possible avenue we can take to provide that housing in an affordable manner, we are focused on. Now, with that said, anybody who is having trouble paying their mortgage, paying their rent, or finding, just finding an apartment or any type of residence, you know, that doesn't help to say that eventually we're going to get to that goal. But we are focused on that. This is not a government-only problem. The developers have to play their part as well. And with all of the development that we have in the city of Tampa, I've met with all of the developers and let them know, one, the value of having workforce affordable housing as a part of their development. To the mayor's point, that cuts out the need for transportation. And that's the second biggest slice in everyone's budget pie, right? If you can take that away, the need for a car and all of the costs that go with that, you have more money for rent and mortgage. And so understanding the significance of having your workforce co-located in your development. And all of the developers that I have talked to are amenable to that. Now, clearly there's a give and take with it. 10% is what we're asking, a minimum of each of the developments. And in turn, they will get increased density. You know, whatever we as a city can do, we will do. Also understand that everyone is in support of growth of our city, and that growth is very thoughtful and very intentional. But we all are very familiar with the acronym NIMBY as well, not in my backyard. Everybody wants it, just don't put it in my backyard. So to Mayor Hibbard's point, we have to understand that we are a growing region, and we have to understand that that is going to come with increased density. And with the housing problem, right up there with that housing crisis is the transportation issue and providing those transit solutions for our community as a whole. And that's part of the solution for transportation, is providing those reliable forms of transit. Number two is changing the mindset, because, you know, in the South, mass transit is for poor people. Once you can afford to have a car, you're going to buy a car. You've all heard me joke, mass transit in the South is more than two people in an SUV. So we've got to change that mindset and understand that we not only do we have to provide those solutions along the transit-oriented development, but also to get people to use that. But the housing is a crisis, and we are addressing that not only from the provision of housing, even for the homeless. We started Tampa Hope, like the program that's in Pinellas County, for those individuals that are homeless. But we all have to focus on this as a region and make sure that we are addressing it as quickly as we possibly can.
And I'd agree with both mayors, particularly in the transportation, jobs, and housing link. I didn't know Whit was here. Glad you're not wearing the other team's baseball cap today, Whit. But you gotta be really aggressive and I think innovative as well, because when we have a project coming in and we're cheering because it's 10% affordable or 10% workforce housing, which is actually folks making 120% of area median income, then we are falling further and further behind. Area median income means 50% of the people make less than that. And so for all of our new housing only has a 10% or a 20% allocation of affordable housing, we are losing that inventory. And that's what's been happening. Look at just drive around downtown. It's luxury, it's market rate, which is great. We love those folks who are moving in, but what we're losing and what we heard all during the campaign and all this year are folks who are here say, I can't afford the rent. My rent went up $500, $1,000. I can't afford the new housing prices. And if we lose those folks, they'll move to Manatee, they'll move to Hillsboro, they'll move to Pasco. And eventually that will hurt our economy. So it really is an economic development issue. What we've done is been very aggressive in going after federal funds. We just talked this morning about another $2.4 million, I believe, that Administrator Amy Foster's team was able to bring in. We've done great work through our lot disposition program that Administrator Corbett has worked on. We've for the first time in St. Petersburg, come to an agreement with Habitat to build 56 townhomes that will be home ownership for folks making 80% AMI, $20 an hour. And so that's the kind of innovation that we need to focus on. And of course, the largest opportunity that we have, and it's not going to solve the entire problem, but it certainly can make a dent, is the historic gas plant district, those 86 acres, and making sure there's an acceptable amount of affordable and workforce housing. And we do need to get past the NIMBY aspect. I gave a former Sarasota mayor a tour of some of the projects that we've instituted here in Pinellas County. I was a commissioner at the time. Of the projects we put up, like Del Mar Terrace and Burlington, they don't look like projects because they never were designed to be. They are just the same kind of housing that anyone should expect, well-built, well-maintained. That's what we talk about when we talk about affordable and workforce housing. But also, who's living there? It's our teachers, the folks that work in our medical offices, the folks that work in our city and our county, the folks that teach. That's who needs the affordable housing. And if we continue to lose it, we won't be viable as a community going forward. So I think we need to be aggressive in that message and also aggressive in funding. And when we have city-owned parcels, that we stick to that priority of affordable and workforce housing.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I think I want to add a little bit to that, too. I think an important point to be made is that we can't concentrate the affordable or low-income housing in specific geographic areas like was done in the 50s and 60s. And in Tampa, the West River project is an excellent example. There's five towers now, two more slated to be built, and they are all from affordable to market rate. And to Mayor Welch's point, you can't tell the difference in any of the towers. Were all built exactly the same. And that, I believe, is what strengthens a community. And it's one of the many elements that makes the Tampa Bay region so attractive. Other cities can claim that they're very diverse, but very few can say that they're diverse, but everyone lives among each other. And we have to continue along that path and ensure that we aren't concentrating poverty in specific areas. And more importantly, we're not pushing people out into the more rural areas where the transportation solutions are exacerbated.
Got it. All right, I've kept you safe and cozy for 45 minutes with easy questions. Now comes the Tigers. Harvey.
Before we get started, Nicole. I just want to remind us that one of the advantages of being a member of Tampa Bay is that you have the opportunity to compete for the Fang and Claw, which is the result of the questions asked today at our luncheon. And in order to ask a question, you do need to be a member. So just another opportunity to join and another great rationale to be a part of this great organization in its 45th year is in order to ask a question, you need to be a member. So I'm gonna let the questions
become
roll.
A member.
Thank you very much for being here. I know all the members appreciate it. Harvey Landris. My question for the mayors are, what is the one thing you would like to see your fellow mayors either change or do differently?
You mean as in the three of us?
Only the three of you.
Only in the three of us.
Only
wow.
Is that what they said?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I would say we meet on a regular basis for lunch. That's the exciting meeting to come to, if you guys want to. But I don't know that I would want anything different. Maybe the strong mayor form of government in Clearwater, if the community agrees with that. But I don't know that I would want to see them do anything, change anything about them, or do anything differently. I appreciate their advice, their friendship, their mentorship. And I think that, again, is another element that makes our region so wonderful, is that we work very collaboratively. If you look at, I say, the Tampa Bay region is sought after really worldwide. Clearwater's got the world's best beaches. St. Pete's got an eclectic downtown, and we've got it all. But no, Seriously, if people want to come, if someone chooses, if we are courting a business to come and they choose Clearwater, that's a win for Tampa and St. Pete and vice versa. And I don't think that we should ever lose that perspective, is that we are all in this together as a region, and as we prosper, we do it together.
Well, first of all, Mayor Castor needs more humility about the city of Tampa, but we're going to counseling next week.
Yeah.
There's a jar in the back that will help. No, you know, if there's anything that I would say, first of all, we do get along really well. And I remember back when I was mayor before, you know, Mayor Baker and Iorio and I, we used to rotate around. And so this is a tradition that these three cities have had for a couple decades. And that's a good thing. I think the one thing that we could do better, and I think we do try to cooperate, but we need to understand how much legislative power the Tampa Bay area has, and we should leverage it more than we do. Because there are more cities, it's not like Orlando or Jacksonville, where there's this unified focus. We need to understand that we've got a lot of legislators that represent our communities and beyond, and leverage that up in Tallahassee. I'm not asking for more, but I want my fair share, both on the federal and the state level. And that would be the only thing I think we can do a better job.
And I'd agree on the transportation, having that single voice for transportation would be something that would advance us and let us compete with areas like Orlando and South Florida. The issue hasn't been the mayor's, though. And it really hasn't been the Pinellas County Commission, Commissioner Flowers. It's really been the debate on the Hillsborough Commission internally. And until we get that solved, we won't have the power that other regions have. I wouldn't ask anything of my colleagues. They both endorse me, so I appreciate it. But and Frank took some heat for that, because partisanship does creep into these local races, but I've worked with both of them a long time, and frankly, Clearwater has given enough. They gave us Chief Holloway, and as Frank reminds us, they generate most of the bed tax that pays for the stadium, so we've got a great relationship.
We would have one suggestion for Tiger Bay, though, to change, is put your sign over that way and bring Mayor Walsh
over. I won't take it personally that y'all
said that way.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Thank you very much. My name is Andrake McMullen. I work with CI Doyle Private Wealth. You all three have mentioned transportation on a couple of occasions. But the success or failure of some of those is my question. So, Mayor Welsh, I'd like you to kick off the Sunrunner. Tell us about the Sunrunner. Tell us about that success. And Mayor Castor and Mayor Hibbard, do you have exact specific plans? How do you connect with that? Mayor Castor, can you get us from downtown St. Pete, from the Sunrunner, all the way to the airport? Mayor Hibbard, can you get us on 66th Street or 19, connect to Sunrunner and get us up to the beaches? Do you have specific plans that you could put into place? So I'd like to start with Mayor Welsh and then the rest of you. Thank you,
man. So it's a story of perseverance. You know, Sunrunner came out of the failure of Greenlight back when I had hair in 2014 and I was on PSTA, because we had to talk about rail, but even if it had been approved for the first 10 years, that rail connection would have been BRT. And we had some legislative opposition from Senator Brandis in particular, who opposed rail, but he supported BRT. And so we got there, even though we lost that referendum. Now we have the first BRT in the Tampa Bay region. And I checked with Brad Miller last night. They are above projections for ridership. The new Howard Franklin that you see going in has the underpinnings for rail built in through partnership with FDOT. The Gateway Express, as you move forward, that'll give you a red light free ride from St. Pete to Palm Harbor when it's done, is well under construction. And so we are making progress. And then as we expand BRT, whether it's on US 19, up to Pasco, over to Hillsborough, We are making that progress incrementally. And so we needed that first project that folks would actually see, feel, and touch. And they're seeing it on Sunrunner. And of course, everybody complained. It looked terrible when they were putting it in. I get it. But we can adjust and change. Those two lanes work well. You still can turn in the left lane. And so I think we're making progress.
I think we still need to look regionally. We've talked about regional MPOs. They've always done battle. We're always concerned if we combine them that we will have one area that gets more of the resources than another. Governance is a very difficult thing. In Pinellas County, we've got some really low-hanging fruit with the CSX line. I used to be our transportation person. I'm not really that anymore, but going back to T-Barda, and when we first started, that CSX line only had two trains a week on it. I think we're down to one. Used to bring newsprint and aggregate into St. Petersburg, but it goes from downtown St. Pete up through Pinellas Park, Largo, into downtown Clearwater, and then up to Oldsmar and over to Tampa. CSX cannot be married to that line, and it's something that could be a BRT to start. Developers love light rail because it is a commitment that you can't take out of the ground, whereas BRT can in fact be moved. But it is a tremendous opportunity that we have and something that with continuity we should continue to pursue. Because what we want to do is create a spine that has rapid movement, whether it's rail or rubber tire. And then you can make that last mile a lot easier with the spine, with the rib system from that spine. And that's what we don't have right now. As Jane said, you know, the problem is people that have a choice, they have an automobile, they're staying in it. We have to make it faster to get from St. Pete to Clearwater, Clearwater to Tampa, and beyond in the region. I have to admit, I made it down here in 29 minutes, which is a record. I did call the chief before coming here, and just kidding. But it was the fastest I've ever made it down here. It was lovely.
I think Chief Holloway, that's why he wasn't here in the very beginning. He's checking out the speeding complaints. Transportation definitely is the regional Achilles heel right now. If we don't do something about transportation, clearly housing is a crisis, but one of the things that I learned once taking this seat in Tampa was how long transportation projects take. My infrastructure mobility group is really tired of me telling them that their mascot is a snail. Actually, I tell them it's a dead snail, but now to be nice, because the transportation solutions take forever. And if you hear about the CSX, I mean, that's probably been 20 years that people have been talking about that as a transportation solution. But we do, as a region, we are missing out on funding because we don't talk with one voice. It is critically important that we do that. Another, what I heard upon taking this seat was that the solution for our transportation woes is a regional approach. And then the other half are, no, you have to start local and work that into regional. So I've just landed on we have to start. And so we are looking at solutions, especially since our transportation referendum narrowly failed this past time. We have got to provide solutions, and we're looking at that for the city of Tampa, and then we're going to continue to look at that regionally. We're expanding our streetcar, which currently is number two in ridership in the nation. It's not just a form of transit any longer. Tourism, it's being used as a form of transit, and it is from Ybor City all the way down to downtown. It's going to go from downtown all the way into Tampa Heights and circle back down, and then we will go east to west with bus systems, bus rapid transit, and hopefully north on Florida Avenue, and connect to the west with West Shore and out to the airport. But, you know, with FDOT having along the Howard Franklin, that connectivity to get across the bridge and connect Pinellas with Hillsboro is incredibly important. What is very interesting as well is the way that the technology is changing. I'm sure both of Frank and Ken have had the same presentations on air taxis. And the industry is very interested in Florida because of our geographic outlay with the Jacksonville to Orlando to Tampa, Tampa Bay down to the Miami area. And so that is something that is probably going to be in the near future. And my question was, although I'm not an accountant, was how much does it cost? And they said, oh, it's relatively inexpensive. It's about the same price you would pay for a cab. And I thought, well, a cab from Tampa to Miami times four is a big bill in my my view. But my point is that I think we're going to see some solutions coming forward. The ferry system, connecting Apollo Beach, again, using that not just for tourism, but as a transportation solution from Apollo Beach to downtown Tampa to MacDill Air Force Base to downtown St. Petersburg, using the water as a viable form of transportation is very important as well. Brightline is planning to connect from Orlando to Tampa, and I just met with them last week. And their ridership along the East Coast is higher than their projections. So there is hope. We just have to find the funding solutions for that. And if we talk in a regional voice, we'll get that funding a lot quicker than we have in the past.
Thank you. A lot of good information. So we're at 1 o'clock, and I want to honor these last two questions, but also respect the time of the people that are here. So I'm going to ask you, I'm assuming you're waiting to ask questions?
Yes, sir.
If you could please ask, just pick one mayor to answer. If others want to weigh in, I will give them the opportunity, but just know that we're going to try and get through these as expediently as possible.
This question is for my mayor, Mr. Welch. I was sitting down there, and I have to draft this pretty quick to ask it of you. As you said, inclusion is a main priority for your administration, and you often refer to deliberate inclusion as an example for social progress. Is there a point where inclusion for the sake of inclusion becomes dangerously close to reverse social inequity for all? I want to give you an example to shape your answer around. You recently appointed a member of the Nation of Islam to the city council. Nation of Islam is considered a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Yes.
I think the first part of the question was a good one. So let's leave it at the first part and forego the example, okay? So
WMTBLP, St. Petersburg.
Let me start over at the example. I want to give you an example to shape your answer around.
But we're not going to do that example.
Okay.
I appreciate it. So it was right, a good question to start with. So
the question is basically like, would you have accepted the same choice by a white mayor of a member of a racist organization because he has done a lot of good for his white community?
So I think you're asking a question about Councilmember Muhammad.
And well, they didn't want me to give that example, so you can't use it either, sir.
Well,
you got there.
Yeah, yeah.
I said the Nation of Islam.
I've made my statement about that. I've spoke with many folks from the Jewish community about that. And I think the way to move forward is to have conversations, and I've tried to facilitate that between the council member and members of the Jewish community and reach an understanding and move forward. And that's the way I feel about it.
Yes, okay, fine.
Okay, one more.
Tom Dunn, this question is for our Mayor Welch. On Sunday, you wrote a column in the Tampa Bay Times, which I read with great interest, and it dealt with the gas plant area and that land, which is now where the stadium is. And in your column, you had a sentence that certainly caught my attention, and I'll read you the sentence. I believe we have a moral responsibility to incorporate meaningful restoration and reparative economic inclusion into this generational development opportunity. Three words leapt out at me: morality, responsibility, community restoration, and reparative economic inclusion. My question is, in your administration, is morality gonna trump finances and economics?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Mayor Kastner, Mayor Hibbert, Mayor Welch, I think that's a good way to end it. Thank you, Tiger Bay, for another fantastic year. Become a member if you haven't already, and we'll see you again next year, if not sooner.
You've been listening to a live broadcast of today's Suncoast Tiger Bay Club kickoff luncheon for 2023, the State of the Bay, with Mayor Ken Welch of St. Petersburg, Mayor Jane Kastner of the City of Tampa, and Mayor Frank Hibbert of the City of Clearwater. The program today was staged in the Student Center of the University of South Florida in St. Petersburg. This has been a public affairs presentation of your community radio station in St. Petersburg, Sunshine 96.7 FM, Radio St. Pete. As we told you, WMTBLP St. Petersburg. Our thanks to Joe Hamilton of St. Pete Catalyst, who acted as the moderator for today's program. Now this is Joe Bordeaux speaking from USF St. Pete, thanking you for listening, and we return you now to our studios.